Whoa. This is the Freedom Fiends Variety Hour, broadcasting from Pod Bay Sit and Stay, 82 feet above sea level at Intergalactic K9 Studios. We loosen your leashes, unlatch those cage doors, and distract your handlers to keep the shock collar of statism from being clamped down around your neck. Can you feel it, Jeremy? Is it working?
Oh, I feel something.
And as always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. To learn more, go to BIPCOT.org. All right.
Yeah. All right.
All right, we're back.
Yes, what's up, Shane? How you doing, man?
I haven't been on for almost a whole week, I think.
Has it been that long?
I'm typically on Sunday nights and then sometimes again during the week. But I had the rest of the week off this week.
We moved things around this week, actually. I think we skipped the show last week, actually. Something like that, maybe. I don't remember. The days blend together for me at this point.
I can imagine being on more than one Freedom Fiend show per week and then doing other podcasts as well.
Yeah, well, at least I'm only down to doing, like, regularly three shows a week now. There was a point where I was doing four or five shows a week, like, regularly. I was scheduled to do two Fiend shows. Sometimes I would add a third. You know, I had my Seeds of Liberty podcast. And then there was a couple other projects I was involved in for a while that we were doing weekly podcasts on top of that. So, you know, then throw in the occasional Wolberts episode, although I never seem to do those. Jim and I just can never work those things out. Jim Jesus, our former host here, co-host here, him and I can just never work our schedule out. Even though I think I have the most free time out of any of the other Wolberts, for some reason, him and I just never match up. But then again, he works nights, and I'm not up all night every night, just, usually Fiend nights.
Yep. So I started getting 3-day weekends now. I dropped Sundays at Amazon and picked up an extra shift during the week so that I can have 4-day weeks instead of five. And so I spent this 3-day weekend catching up on some of my shows. Started watching Defenders, which came out on Netflix this weekend. And it's pretty neat Marvel series. I think a lot of you guys out there might be familiar with it. Me and Jeremy talked about it during the break a little bit. And I do highly recommend it, actually. If anybody's interested in watching it, go ahead and do so. And then I also watched Game of Thrones, which I got the leaked copy a little bit ahead of time. So I tried not to let any spoilers out until everybody else watched it. But it's getting pretty epic.
Yeah, I see a lot of that stuff posted. I still haven't watched it. Eventually, one day, I'll probably sit down and watch the series. I just, I got so into the books years ago and then got so mad when I realized George R.R. Martin was probably never going to finish the gosh darn series. And and then, the TV show, it's just like, no, the pain is still too fresh.
Well, and the series has diverged, I guess, from the books in a few major ways. So,
well,
it's still very similar, I guess.
Well, they kind of have license to do so, considering he never actually finished the story anyway, right? I mean, how far can they take, I mean, unless they're going to go, strictly to the book, I mean, I'm sure they could get plenty of seasons out of that, but, a lot of people would be bored by that because, there were parts of those stories that did, there were lulls in the action and stuff, and those usually don't bode too well for TV ratings, so you have to shorten it up anyway, and once you're going to be out of material, I mean, I don't know how far is it up to, like, I mean, I know it's not exact, but what are they in, season 6 or 7 by this point?
I think this is season 7 now. Yeah, they're about halfway through.
So, like, is it past book 5? Because that was the last one he put out, right?
I have no idea where they're at in the books. Yeah, because I haven't read the books myself.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, I didn't find out about him until years after he had written the, because I guess the first two came out in, maybe it was the 90s he wrote the first two? And then, from what I've heard, it was like, between every pair, they just got longer, and like the wait time just got longer and longer and longer. So I didn't stumble across them until, geez, late 2000s. And then I read all five back to back to back to back to back, and I was just so enthralled with the entire story, you know, because...
There was some speculation that R.R. Martin was an anarchist or something, or at least a libertarian, and I know Michael did some digging into that and discovered that he actually is a Democrat who voted for Hillary in the last election. And so the way that he's kind of showing the problems with corruption and power and so forth seems to be almost incidental, because he's not actually an anarchist. And, but a lot of people have tried to draw similarities between R.R. Martin and Tolkien, who actually was an anarchist.
See, I don't know, because I've read a lot of stuff. I mean, I know toward later in life, Tolkien pretty, like, I think he, one of the quotes from him is, like, he was just siding more and more that side of it. But he, you know, because he eventually saw the writing on the wall. But I don't even think when he wrote his stories, which, you know, did point out, you know, a lot of that type of stuff too, I don't even think he was fully an anarchist at that point either.
I might be confusing Tolkien and Tolstoy, who I believe was also an anarchist, or was more well known as one.
Yeah, I think they both were. But yeah, Tolkien. Yeah. Tolkien did. I think there was this the one quote about, like, there was stuff, his letters of his, J.R.R. Tolkien, who wrote the Lord of the Rings series and a couple, you know, a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there was a letter his son, or a letter to his son, maybe, that his son released, like, years and years and years after his death, or was discovered, and basically said that, you know, he finally realized that there was just no hope in government whatsoever, and he's like, yeah, the anarchists were right, type of thing.
So it's more of like in retrospect kind of thing.
Yeah, but he definitely had those leanings, more so than Martin. Martin's one of those people that people just wanted to ascribe that to him, because, you know, it seemed to make sense based on the stories.
But yeah, Michael found out that he was actually a Democrat who voted for Hillary. So there goes that theory.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's unfortunate. Although, you know, I mean, based on what I remember, I mean, it has been a few years now, but based on what I remember when I remembered reading the stories, it wasn't like, yeah, I mean, sure, he pointed out the corruption, but he was talking about kings and kingdoms and stuff like that. So it was like medieval stuff when there was always those problems anyway. But it wasn't like, it doesn't like seem like he was talking about anybody replacing it, because there were still people that were wanted to be king. They wanted to be benevolent kings, but you know, the Starks, they wanted, they were the good guys, but they still were going to be king.
Right. And to, you know, benevolent king is almost an oxymoron, I think, to us anarchists at this point. We don't really believe in such a thing.
No, but, you know, although there is the argument to be made and has been made, and I actually do find it very, you know, convincing that to a certain extent, most kings actually are, because they want to, you know, preserve their kingdom to hand over their...
More so than dictators or governments. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, because they want to be, you know, I think the most famous one, at least, you know, in our circles, is Hoppe's argument about this, about how monarchy is preferable to democracy, because a monarch, you know, a king, a legitimate king who has a kingdom, wants to preserve his kingdom and wants to be able to hand it over to his, you know, his heirs, so they, you know, they can continue the kingdom and do that stuff. So, of course, it's in their best interest to keep they may not treat their subjects spectacularly, but they're going to do it, you know, they're going to do well enough that people don't try to, like, storm the gates and kill them. And also make sure the overall, like, the land and everything is in good, you know, pretty good shape, so we can pass it on. Because otherwise, you know, you're going to leave your, you know, unless you hate your children, you're going to want to leave them with something good. So they have a much more vested interest in keeping it, you know, keeping the land in good order, keeping the buildings and just the whole, you know, the whole kingdom itself in order. Whereas in a democracy, you often end up with the tragedy of the commons, because most democracies are just socialist, you know, socialist societies, being masked under some version of, or some other name. So, and you end up with the tragedy of the commons, where there isn't a vested interest, because nobody really cares, because it's every, you know, it's as I referred to it last year, I think, Schrodinger's property, you know, where everybody owns it and nobody owns it all at the same time. So
yeah, that was good.
So why do why are they gonna care what happens to it? I mean, mm-hmm. of course, that doesn't go for everybody. You're gonna get some people who do care what happens to it. You know, the do-gooders that want to do things. But on the whole, most people are just like, you know. Or even if they do care, it's like, well, nobody else is caring for her. Why am I going to go out of my way then?
Right. And I have found that to be, like, the case with, like, public or communal property. People just don't take as good of care of it as they would as if it was their own private property.
Yeah, exactly. You know? It's, because, again, even the people who want to, often they often or you know, want to be nice about it and want to preserve it or whatever, you know, whatever it is, they see other people not doing it, and it just becomes, you know, why bother after a certain point? So even a lot of the good ones at the start give up. So yeah, it's definitely you know, you're more likely to take care of your own stuff than anybody else's stuff. Unless you're getting paid to take care of somebody else's stuff, right. You know, like me, I get paid to take care of other people's animals, you know, so I try to do a darn good job of taking care of them because I'm being paid. If I wasn't being paid, you know, I may do a charity every once in a while, but I'd be a lot less likely to, you know, go out of my way to take care of people's animals if I wasn't getting paid for it, you know.
Right. And then you got guys like the one who tried to go out and fill the potholes himself, and they basically got in trouble for it.
Well, yeah, we've talked about that. That happened here in my neighborhood, and it's happened in plenty of other places. You can't win. either you keep trying to so long until you become apathetic like everybody else, or you actually go out there and do something about it, and then you end up in trouble. Mm-hmm. So
thanks, government.
Exactly. Thanks, government. we started talking about these shows and stuff. So yeah, I'll watch Game of Thrones eventually. I am interested in this Defender series though, because for those who don't know, it's you know, like you said, it's a Marvel series, but it's a combination of a bunch. They've been working up to this because they have four separate series on Netflix currently going on: Luke Cage, Daredevil, Iron Fist, and Jessica Jones, and the four of them all team up because they're all from the New York area, and they all team up to. I think the tagline I saw somewhere is "They're not friends, but they're going to defend the city." So should be interesting. So I'll have to check that out.
So far, so good.
Worms.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you tired of driving your kids to G.G. Allen's grave only to be unable to find the grave because some dick stole the headstone? Well, there is a solution. The Find G.G. Allen's Grave app for Android will give you door-to-grave directions. The Find G.G. Allen's Grave app uses advanced GPS protocols to guide you with voices to the exact patch of dust and grass where G.G. took his final dirt nap. Bring the kids. Do some needle drops at the G.G.iest place on Earth. G.G. always had a huge underground following, but it's even bigger now that he's literally underground. So it's no surprise that lots of folks today take a pilgrimage to G.G.'s grave. But getting there wasn't easy. Until this app. Forget Graceland, forget the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Those are plastic places for old people with jobs. Hell, even CBGB's is gone, and that former hallowed ground is now a yuppie coffee bar. The real rock and roll Mecca is an unmarked patch of grass in Littleton, New Hampshire, and our free app will show you how to get there. Get the Find G.G. Allen's Grave app today. Even if you're not planning to go there soon, the app is fun. The Find G.G. Allen's Grave app is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License, and it's from the good people at Beast Lick Internet Policy Commission Outreach Team, who also brought you Fiend Phone, the Freedom Fiends radio app, BIPCOT, MeowBit, and of course, Truth, Justice, American Way. The Find G.G. Allen's Grave app is free. Get it today on the Google Play Store or on Amazon. Your family will thank you. And don't forget to rate and review. Worms, eating G.G. Allen's face.
Some notes from Michael, who would like me to read them. he was nudging me again. I think he's upset because I didn't read them last week. I think he sent me the same notes for both shows I did last week, and we never got to them. So I got another message, like, you know, in case you have some time, here's these messages you never got to last week. So, but they're both connected to the whole situation in Charlottesville, which we actually have another follow-up story on anyway. So it's not like I'm just, you know, cramming these in here for no reason. So he sent me an email, and these his Michael's notes were talking about Chris Cantwell, who of course became uber famous for himself, or infamous, mm-hmm. I guess, through this whole thing. And somebody we've talked about a lot on this show, and obviously most of our feelings about him are not, we don't hide them very well. So
normally he can't be named, but I think named him.
Oh no, Michael lifted that ban a while ago.
Okay.
So yeah, that's fine. He wants me to read what he wrote.
He has been digitally removed, so to speak, from the internet.
Yes, well, that's part of Michael's notes here. So Cantwell issued a video where he's crying, saying there's a warrant for his arrest in Charlottesville, which I think we might have touched on last week. Sorry, that was me. That was me interjecting there. Back to Michael's quotes. Implied it was for some kind of violence he did that he claims was self-defense, and he sounds like he's at the end of his rope and ready for a shootout. Which I would agree. You know, again, my notes here. I would agree. He's now been scrubbed from Facebook, YouTube, PayPal, etc. in the last few days. I gotta say, as much as I dislike him, I really don't like the 1984 stuff going on. Of throw him down the memory hole, so all that will be left of is be the SPLC's article on him. Same thing that's happening to Antifa, acting like ISIS and pulling down statues in the night. I do agree with him on that point. The whole as much as I do relish in watching him suffer because of how horrible he's been. And, I do have personal experience with a guy, too. And it just, at first, I was sad to see him turn as far as he did. But the more and more just outlandish and, you know, obnoxious he was, I don't mind seeing things coming to him. But the whole censorship thing, it is a slippery slope as far as I'm concerned. Because on one hand, it's, yes, there's private businesses, you know, private companies, Facebook, YouTube, all these things that have chosen to deplatform him specifically for his views, which is the thing I have a problem with.
Well, I mean, it is the freedom of association and disassociation, and it's they're free to disassociate with him as they so choose. However, it seems like he is being kind of censored across the board now. So
Well, yeah, and that's why, like I said, that's why it's kind of touchy, because it's, you know, on one hand, yeah, sure, people have the right to, you know, allow and disallow whoever they want to use their service, but yeah. Because of just the huge sweeping narrative, and this is actually going to touch on another article that I had that I wanted to bring up tonight, the whole idea about, you know, letting people like this have platforms, because, you know, as Michael said, when you just, like, you know, throw him down the memory hole and just try to, you know, basically almost pretend that he didn't exist, you know, then these ideas, they're not, you know, they're suppressed to an extent, but then, you know, as time goes on, you know, if you shut down the speech of everybody you disagree with, whether it's Nazis, whether it's Antifa, whether it's, you know, Republicans, Democrats, you know, whatever it is, if you shut down those views completely and don't let not allow them to be discussed anywhere, then as time goes by, people begin to forget why the ideas were so bad to begin with. So when they do finally start to rear their head again, people have forgotten all about it and may get suckered in all over again because, you know, with the flowery language that gets used or just the changes in terms to, you know, kind of like the whole idea of the alt-right original, you know, originally, which, you know, the term originally was coined by Richard Spencer, who is a very hardcore white nationalist, although not everybody who considers themselves alt-right is necessarily a white nationalist or a white supremacist. But him and his group, and you know, he's the one who named the group. They are, but you know, people like that, you can shut them up, but they've come back now and changed their name. So, anyway,
you and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hi there. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Purse.io is a great website where you can spend Bitcoin on Amazon or trade Amazon gift cards for Bitcoin. I use Purse myself and I love it. You can also get discounts on Amazon. You can get 5% right this minute, or if you place your order and wait a day or so, you can name your discount and get 10%, 20%, even up to 33% off. You can try Purse right now and get 0.01 Bitcoin free after you complete your first order over $50. And if you go through the Freedom Fiends link, Purse will also send 0.01 Bitcoin to the Freedom Fiends. Help yourself to some agorism and help Liberty Media while you're at it. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Purse link at the top right, even if you've used Purse before. Or enter the referral code FIENDS when you sign up at purse.io. That's FIENDS. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra. Do it!
Segment we were talking about, you know, the idea of actually letting people with horrible ideas voice said horrible ideas so others don't forget about how horrible those ideas actually are. And this was actually tied to some notes Michael had sent that he wanted me to read. And the whole idea of our quote-unquote, you know, our buddy Chris Cantwell getting what a lot of people think is what he deserves, and to a certain extent I do too, but getting deplatformed because he became a very public face of what happened down in Charlottesville over the last week or so.
Yeah.
And before we go any further to what we were talking about, there was a second note that Michael wanted me to read, and I should probably do this now before I forget about it all again, and then he gets mad at me. It's not related to Campbell, but it is related to the whole Charlottesville thing. And Michael said it was weird for him to watch the Charlottesville footage. Surreal was the word he actually used, because he actually, you know, he lived in Charlottesville for quite a while, and he said every shot he saw, he was like, it was like I threw up there too.
Yeah.
And he said the car crash was 3 blocks away from the gay bar on Water Street where Baby Opaque and the Beef People, two of the early bands he was part of, used to play when it was the only place in town that would let punk bands play.
Was that two bands or one?
Those were two different bands, Baby Opaque. Okay. and the Beef People. Sorry, yes.
Yeah, I could see that being one big long band name. That would be
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I didn't even think of that as I read it like that. But yes, no, those were two separate bands he was a part of, two of his bands. So I can imagine, you know. Of course he has too soon, but you know, as I always say, it's never too soon in the meme-iverse. And you know, whatever. I can understand that. You lived there. You lived there for a time. You did all these things there at that time. You know, you see this. If you see this stuff on the news, all of a sudden, it's like, hey, I remember that place. And if your mind goes to, well, hey, I threw up there. Well, you know, that's what happened, man. But anyway, so yeah. So on the whole, going back to what we were talking about in the last segment about letting Nazis and just people in general with horrible ideas. I mean, you don't have to let them on your property. You don't have to let them on your websites or whatever if you don't want to. But overall, I agree with Michael's, or, you know, other point about the whole, you know, letting in this case, Nazis have their say, not just to let them have their say, but so those ideas, so people realize how horrendous those ideas actually are, rather than just hearing about it second or third person, you know, because it kind of loses its, you know, luster, for lack of a better term there. You know, after a while, people don't remember it, and they kind of, like, it gets dull, you know, the idea of it, how, why it was so bad and why it was so horrible gets dulled in people's minds. And that ties into an article that I mentioned before that I had found on one of my favorite sites. I think it's one of yours too, Shane, because I know you and I use it a lot for stuff. Mm-hmm. Although I know a lot of times I get called, you know, I've seen this get called a communist rag by the alt-righters and the so-called anarchists.
Really?
That, well, the people who hate Jeffrey Tucker, because Tucker's attached to this.
But it's economics.
I know. And it's also been around for, it's one of the longest standing libertarian publications, the Foundation for Economic Education, which was originally started by what's his name? Oh gosh, now it's going to escape me. not Leonard Reed. Was it Leonard Reed? Yeah, he's the one who wrote iPencil, right? Was it Leonard Reed that wrote iPencil? Or was the other Reed? I can't remember. Whoever it was. Anyway, it's been around for a long time. But this article actually was titled "The Best Anti-Nazi Strategy Is to Let Them Speak." And this was by Tom Mullen. It's a short article, and Shane and I were going to read it really quickly because I thought it was really good, and it kind of speaks directly to this point that we're discussing here. So it starts off, "While the country is still reeling from the shocking images of the violence in Charlottesville, Virginia last weekend, CNN reports the so-called alt-right is planning 9 events for this weekend, including a free speech rally in Boston. As expected, counter-protests are being planned," and they happened, because that so-called free speech rally already took place. But "although local police in most key areas are planning to take measures to keep the adversarial groups apart to avoid violence, I'm sure this strategy will be criticized because it will give white supremacist neo-Nazis and others of their ilk a safe space to, quote-unquote, spew hate. That's right. It will. And that's precisely why it's the right strategy for a number of reasons. It should have been employed in Charlottesville. Everyone involved would have been both freer and safer."
Yeah. And then the article goes on to say that the ACLU is right on this. A wise man once said, quote, "We don't have the First Amendment so we can talk about the weather. We have it so we can say very controversial things," unquote. No reasonable person believes that the attorneys for the ACLU have any sympathy for what the speakers at the Unite the Right rally were going to say last weekend, but they recognize how important it was to defend the right to assemble and exercise their rights, even to say things that the overwhelming majority of Americans find offensive. So the ACLU went into federal court to get a local decision to revoke the group's permit overturned. The pertinent question isn't why let them speak, it's why not let them speak. The answer to the latter question is fear. Well-meaning people are genuinely afraid of these people growing their movement. After all, it happened before, right? And it didn't happen in some third world backwater, but in one of the leading industrial nations of the world. There are still people alive today who survived that horror. It comes down to whether Americans are going to trust each other with freedom or not. The media used all its cinematic arts to paint last weekend's march as the bellwether of dark political movement that could sweep the country. Really? Does anyone really believe that a few hundred losers looking and sounding like the Illinois Nazis from the Blues Brothers movie are going to persuade a significant percentage of the Americans that they're right? Quote, "The Jew is using the black as muscle against you," unquote. That's literally what they were saying in Charlottesville. We used to lampoon this stuff.
Exactly. Mockery, not muscle. "For all the criticism President Trump has absorbed for his statements about last week, there were some surprising moments of clarity. It's true that not all people who showed up to protest removing the statues were white supremacists or Nazis. It's also true not all counter-protesters were peaceful. It takes quite a bit of self-righteous denial to not see Antifa seizing an opportunity to do what they always do, assault people and destroy property, just as the Nazis seized the opportunity of the statue's removal to preach their idiotic message. Americans don't need to take a side in that fight, but we should take the First Amendment side,
well,
side note. Yeah, okay. I don't really care about the First Amendment, but carrying on. Continuing. Regarding similar events in the future, if we've lost trust in our neighbors even to reject the arguments of Nazis, we've acquiesced to giving up freedom itself. We may as well accept that the rest of the arguments of central planners looking to rule over every aspect of our social and economic lives. Theirs is the same reasoning. We rubes can't be trusted with freedom. The Nazis should be allowed to speak and have video of their events widely disseminated by the media. Had that approach been taken last weekend, we might all be laughing at them now instead of mourning the death of an innocent woman. And, yeah, so I thoroughly agree with this this piece by Tom Mullen. You know, it's kind of what I was getting at before is, you know, this, you know, shutting them down. Sure, you know, you don't want to hear their speech. It may offend you. It may upset you. It may anger you. And I get that. But, you know, if you don't, you know, if you keep hiding it away, then less people are aware of it. But, you know, as Tom pointed out, if you let these things be broadcast, then everybody can see how horrible these ideas are, you know, because they can only be masked for so long. You know, that's what I was starting to get at before the last break, you know, with the alt-right as it is, because it was basically a rebranding of the term white nationalist. You know, they Richard Spencer coined that term to come up with something to call his little group. But at the heart, that's what it is. But it's basically, you know, just like the KKK itself kind of rebranded itself over time. You know, it kept the name, but, they went from a certain look to getting more professional looking when they were out and about, you know, dressing in suits and stuff like that. And all the different current white nationalist groups and white supremacist groups, they all have a certain look that they go for, you know. And they present themselves, and if you just keep shifting, and they change the language, they change the words, you know, and if people aren't aware of it, it's what's that old saying, you know, people who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Although I much prefer the version, people who do learn from history are doomed to watch other people repeat it.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, or actually suffer watching other people repeat it. But yeah, when people are wiped off the map, as it were, in these situations, like with what happened with Cantwell, you know, like I said, there's a part of me that cheers that because, well, the guy's kind of horrible.
Right.
And, you know, on a personal level, I like seeing him get taken down a notch or two like that. But on a, you know, more general level, yeah. On one hand, I think it's, you know, it's a dangerous precedent because anybody could get shut down because, you know, for anything. And then, on the other hand, if the message is as vile as, you know, his can be and other people like him, then, yeah, it may be hard to hear, but being reminded every once in a while that these people are still out there and exist and this is what they really believe, I don't think is necessarily a bad thing.
It almost seems like a little bit of both is going on because did you see the Vice article that they did on the video they did on Cantwell and the alt-right, basically?
No, I didn't end up watching that.
They actually did give him quite a big platform to get his views out there, which he did spew a lot of vile and hatred out. And I think that a lot of the reaction, the widespread reaction we're seeing, is probably because of his message getting out so wide last week. Because I think that's like the HBO news or something. And so Cantwell kind of went viral there. And I think that's probably why even PayPal has dropped him now, which surprised me because you would think that a business like PayPal wouldn't, you know, get into stuff like that. But I guess they do.
Well, I mean, I learned, you know, I kind of saw it firsthand what can happen in certain situations when what happened to me a couple of months ago, because I had two organizations that I was affiliated with that, well, people mistakenly thought were sponsors of mine, which was not the case. Just, you know, companies I had associations with, and pretty much that was it. Ended up dropping me because a bunch of people called and reported what a horrible person I was for what I said. And, you know, they didn't really care about the story. They just knew people were complaining. So to protect themselves, we gotta get rid of this guy. So I understand it on that level. Not that I agree with it, but, you know, what are you going to do?
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Fiends. I'm Shane, and I'm here with Jeremy.
Yeah.
Before the break, we were speaking about Nazis and their hate speech.
Hate speech.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just the idea of actually letting them have their say, and instead of hiding it away so people forget about how horrible and offensive it is. Or just letting it get out there so more people can see how horrible it is, and then they can be drummed out of ostracized even faster and more effectively. The whole idea of just censoring in general, while I'm totally for people, taking their and doing what they want with their own property, whether it be physically not allowing people to say stuff on their land, or disassociating people from their websites or whatever it is. Like I'm obviously for that, but I just think that it can get into dangerous territory when there's just this sweeping stuff like what happened at Cantwell. When did they just get banned? Not because they actually did anything on that site in particular. That's another thing. Like if they didn't actually violate the terms of service with the contract he had with that particular company, like that's another area where it gets dicey. It's like, well, what did he, he or anybody else, like if they didn't do anything on that particular site,
Yeah, that's where it gets to be a tough, like kind of gray area for me as well.
Yeah, exactly. Because, so
you think as a business, they wouldn't disassociate from him unless he actually violated their terms of service or something like that,
Yeah, or he was bringing negative light onto them somehow,
Right.
I'm guessing a lot of these people that a lot of these companies or organizations that made it public that they were dropping him, a lot of people had no idea he was a member there to begin with. And they may never have known if the company didn't come out and make it public, So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that whole thing is, that's my, like I said, the article we read from Tom Mullen over at Fee, I fully support, because I think that people should be allowed to have their speech and, let bad ideas be aired so people recognize how bad they actually are, rather than trying to shield people from the bad ideas, because that just leads, historically you can see that just kind of leads to certain ideas having this like almost mystique around them because they become like taboo. And just like with anything else, when you prohibit something, more people are inclined to want to go, hey, what's this all about? Why is it being prohibited?
Right.
Why can't we look at this? Why can't we talk about this? Why can't we read this? Whatever it is, that type of stuff always seems to backfire,
It becomes forbidden fruit at that point.
Exactly. So unless you're going to like literally eradicate an entire group of people and, slash and burn everything that was ever existed about them, which itself is just becomes a horrible irony, because, you know, these people are mad because these are fascists essentially that we're talking about, and then they want to use fascist means to stomp them out.
Exactly. So
they which kind of goes right over all of their heads. But unless you're going to take those drastic measures, these people are always going to be around anyway. You know, it's just kind of the way it is. Just, you know, there's always going to be bad actors. And a lot of these people, they're some pretty bad actors, or at least they talk about a lot of bad acts. That's the other issue here is, you know, what happened in Charlottesville and then what apparently didn't happen in Boston over this weekend. I saw a lot of stuff that apparently the supposed free speech rally wasn't even a free speech. It wasn't the free speech rally everybody thought it was going to be. I mean, a couple of live feeds I saw, there was this black professor up giving a speech and a lot of people holding anti Monsanto signs. So I think a lot of people were duped into thinking this thing was going to happen.
Sounds like they got their minds crossed.
Yeah. Although on the other hand, I heard a couple of them got shut down, and a couple of people, they were supposed to be these rallies, because as that article mentioned, there were supposed to be 9 different rallies all across the country springing out of Charlottesville. And in California, a couple of them were shut down by the organizers, who claimed they were now afraid of Antifa attacking them, because there was a book burning that was supposed to happen. And so, yeah, man. Let the market speak. Let these let those ideas get out there and let them be ridiculed out of existence instead of hidden.
The worms.
We're going to head off to the market, and we'll be back in the second hour.
The Freedom Fiends now have a free app for your Android phone, tablet, phablet, or other Chrome robot turd, available now from the Google Play Store, Amazon, and FreedomFiends.com. Lovingly handcrafted by head hamster Michael W. Dean, the Freedom Fiends radio app is like having a virtual libertarian re-education camp in your pocket. It's your gateway to the exclusive, high-demand group that is the Freedom Fiends. Install the Freedom Fiends radio Android app today. It's free, and of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. And get ready for LibPair with the Freedom Fiends radio app for Android worms.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends.
This is the Freedom. I got it. Get out of here. Let me do my intro. Broadcast to the Libertarian Education Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Peace Plaza on the artificial side of Lip Bear 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Worms.
Gosh, Shane, I was just waiting for that 10-second mark. You're jumping all in on me.
Well, I think I'm counting the 10 seconds from the wrong spot. Is it okay. When the music comes in or when...
Yeah, it's when the music hits. Yeah. So, all right. Anyway, but yeah.
Because
so
I'm looking at my my little timer here, and I go from when it turns green, basically.
Oh, yeah. Well, that could always be off, so I wouldn't trust that. It's a feel, man. You got to get a feel for it. Anyway, so we're back here for the second hour. I am Jeremy, joined by Shane tonight. And we spent a good portion of the first hour still talking about the aftermath of what happened in Charlottesville and, you know, the subsequent demonstrations and lack thereof, I guess. The whole idea that shutting this speech down while making people feel good in the interim is kind of a dangerous idea, because you know, it's much better to let these people have their say and be exposed for what they really are, and let people, you know, more people recognize how horrible these ideas are, rather than just, you know, keeping them away from it, that they may get, you know, people may investigate them later on and not realize, you know, same thing with, like, you know, the whole idea of people trying to erase history, like the bad parts of history that make them feel better, you know, like the statues and the monuments and all this stuff that are people demanding to be taken down because it hurts their feelings, or they feel that they're being oppressed in some way because these things still exist. you know, just, you know, all you do by trying to destroy and cover up history is, you know, allow future generations to not really recognize how bad these ideas were in the first place. So,
right. And then you're just doomed to repeat it once again.
Exactly. So we're trying to break the cycle around here, folks, not repeat every silly mistake that we've made before. But anyway, so yeah, that's what we were talking about a lot in the first hour. And there was actually one other piece on another article I had on the first pertaining to that situation that I did want to cover that we didn't get to. So we're going to have to bleed over to the second hour with that anyway. But this actually, I think, is kind of a lot of people in our circles would say, well, duh, we know this happens all the time. But here's another thing.
Right.
Ideas that should get out there, because a lot of people don't realize this happens. You know, this story, the headline was exclusive. FBI admits that federal informants linked to deadly Charlottesville riots unlikely to face charges. So, yeah, the FBI has had to admit that, you know, something that a lot of people in our circles, and then of course even more conspiracy minded, talk about all the time, about agent provocateurs and informants being on the inside of these groups. I was trying to make that argument a lot last week about the whole idea about the KKK, because a lot of the numbers in the KKK are actually federal informants. There aren't as many. That group is actually, you know, supposedly it's on the rise again recently, but it had dwindled down to so many people, so little amount of people after years. And the running joke was there was like, you know, a couple hundred, and like probably like 80% of them were actually informants or actual feds, just kind of talking to each other.
Basically.
But this whole thing about, you know, so, you know, like I said, in our circles, this is kind of well known. A lot of people out there may not recognize this, but, you know, the FBI, CIA, all these different organizations, all the alphabet soup organizations, they infiltrate these different groups all the time. But then a lot of times they try to instigate them into doing these things or incite them into doing these things. So then they can swoop in and be the heroes by arresting these horrible people. Although a lot of times is the case as it happens with, like, say, the different terrorist plots that they claim that they've, you know, thwarted, they set these people up, and not only did they set them up, but, you know, and it's okay, fine, the person is still taking the action. A lot of times they take people that are mentally unstable. There was another article that I saw earlier I forgot to grab, but apparently there's another case where there's a mother claiming that the FBI tried to entrap her, like, mentally challenged son. and try to get him in on some bomb plot or something. So, you know, that's where my head goes to when I think of, like, you know,
the absolutely
FBI getting involved and stuff like this.
One of my favorite meme sites that has a profile picture that says something like FBI foils FBI terror plot, you know, because this kind of thing is almost cliche at this point. You know, we've heard it ever since the original World Trade Center bombing where the FBI was implicated. We've heard this kind of thing time and time again. And the phenomenon of agent provocateur, like you said, is all too familiar, especially in our circles. We've seen this so often that it does become cliche with events like this.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, here it is. The FBI is actually, you know, the FBI admits that there's people there. But then, you know, then they say, well, yeah, we're not going to charge. We're most likely not going to. There's not going to be charges pressed against any of the informants. Even if they were ones involved in the violence or inciting the violence or whatever, that would get anybody else would get thrown in jail for that. But these people,
exactly.
Well, they're protected because, well, they're being paid in most of these situations by the government to do this stuff. You know, like there was a little brief article that we had on this, but the very last line of it speaks directly to this point. You know, because it says one FBI insider said that the Bureau is somewhat handcuffed in an investigation like this. How can you charge someone who might be linked when you've been paying them for months or longer? Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's like, I mean, I would think that they, you know, a lot of these people wouldn't have a problem with that. Like they'll throw the pleb, you know, even their informants, they'll throw them under the bus if they have to save their own behind. But in the larger picture, sure, if they have a good informant, they're going to want to keep them. So why are they going to want to get, you know, let them get punished? You know, to me, that's just another extension of like the thin blue line, essentially. You know, we'll protect ours that are doing bad things just because they're ours, because we need them for something else. You know, where, you know, again, if it was you or I in that situation or anybody else, oh yeah, if they had the evidence, oh yeah, we'd definitely be throwing the book at them, you know, indicting them. But, you know, and they also claim that it's too complicated, you know, because first we have to unravel whose informant belongs to who and what agency, and there's all this overlapping stuff, you know. I mean, because this happens in other sectors of the police, you know, where there's, you know, DEA agents undercover that cops, you know, local cops aren't aware of. You know, there's been plenty of movies where they make fun of this because it used to happen. I think they've gotten a little better about it, but that was, you know, you mentioned 9/11 before. You know, that was one of those things that came out after 9/11. That none of the agencies actually, you know, they don't actually talk to one another, so nobody has any idea what the other one's doing. Which on one hand I think is good, because, you know, more collusion between them is always a bad thing for us. But, you know,
on the other hand, it gives them an excuse for being, you know, inept.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, well, as with most things, double-edged sword. But yeah, so I just think it's, you know, the fact that they're just openly admitting that they have these agents there, and yeah, we're not gonna, you know, we can't prosecute them because they're, you know, number one, we have to untangle who belongs to who and who's, you know, because then when it comes to stuff like that, there's a hierarchy of whose case is more important. So, you know, depending on which agency has which informant trying to bust which person for which thing, you know, whichever ranks higher to them, it's like, okay, well, we're really trying to bust this guy for this thing. So, you know, your situation is going to have to take a back seat, you know, which, of course, is them picking winners and losers in, you know, criminal activity, and like in this situation, things that actually could be like really criminal activity, like violence and stuff like that, versus just, you know, busting people for drugs and stuff like that. But in these situations, it's like, yeah, you're still picking winners, losers. And if one of your guys actually brains somebody, and, you know, the person is like has permanent brain damage from it, oh, well, you know, we can't really, you know, sorry, we're gonna have to, like, you know, protect them because they're more valuable to us than the person who got injured and maybe permanently disfigured or damaged or in some sense, you know, anything like that. Nope, we still need it. They're more important to us than that person. So, and then of course, you know, in those situations, they'll usually just throw some more stolen tax money at the people. It's to the people who's, you know, to the family of the people who was injured or killed or whatever. Like, here, just take this and be quiet and go away. Because again, nobody's gonna be punished for the death or injurement of your, you know, friend or family member, because that's not how this works.
Right. Unfortunately, they too get to hide behind the thin blue line.
Exactly. That's what I said. It becomes an extension of that as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. So
I agree.
I think that's pretty scummy. I think they should all be facing trial for something. the informants, if they were indeed in, you know, if they were the ones inciting the violence or the ones actually doing, you know, involved in it, then sure, they should be punished if they actually hurt innocent people or stuff like that. And then the FBI and CIA, yeah, they should be facing charges too, as far as I'm concerned. So
right, whatever happened to equal justice under the law?
Oh, that's such a myth.
Oh, I know, it's completely a myth. It's a myth that they tend to believe in it still.
Yeah, which I don't understand, because it's so easily disprovable. You know, not even just like, you know, oh, look at the government corruption. It's like, no, just by the own way they're trained, and that's public knowledge how they're trained, you know, because if you try to argue with somebody like a statist about this, you know, or somebody who thinks you're crazy for thinking that law can be decentralized to some extent, or, you know, or have polycentric law or anything other than what's currently, you know, the current structure of the police and stuff like that, they, you know, Anytime I've gotten into a discussion with them, you know, if I mention certain things, they'll just say, oh, well, no, you know, if you try to explain the gun in the room situation, oh, that's not true. You know, not all cops will do that. They're allowed to use their discretion. It's like, yeah, exactly. You don't realize that them being able to use discretion necessarily negates equality under the law.
Exactly.
So, like I said, you don't even have to point out the corruption. It's like, no, it's the actual how they're trained. Yes, you're supposed to you're supposed to enforce the law, but you can, you know, you have discretionary powers.
I am the law.
Yeah, right. Anyway, well, I hear the music, so we're gonna head off to the market. And, we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
We've finally been talking about the whole Charlottesville situation. It's been over a week at this point, but there was just too much there that we had to finally get covered. But I think we'll finally switch gears, and you mentioned it at the beginning of the show maybe, but we do have the eclipse coming tomorrow, the big solar eclipse, and what was it? It's the first total one in 99 years, is it?
Probably like for that? North America.
For where we'd be able to see it. So, yeah, I don't really care too much about it, but there's a... I know a lot of people do, and I'm glad I'm not in the path of it, direct path of it, because from what I've read, like, all those areas are just going to be horrible, even worse than normal as far as traffic's concerned, because there's going to be so many...
Yeah, I saw the traffic in Oregon the last couple of days has been insane, and I think Michael even said that... Wyoming is going to double in population for the eclipse.
And then other issues too, where I think he said he doesn't even expect to have internet tomorrow, so even if he was back to doing shows regularly, he probably wouldn't be able to show up tomorrow night. It's just going to be a mess. I have a buddy who's, I think he traveled, I can't remember if he lives in Colorado or if he traveled into Colorado to be, to be over there, but he's like all the people he keeps seeing and running into, like in every store he goes to or whatever, he's like, everybody's there for the eclipse, which is kind of cool because you could just talk to like all these random people about this one, this one thing they're always like. But on the other hand, it's kind of horrible because every person I run into is here for that. And the place that they're going to see it, there's only like one road up to it. He's already anticipating how horrible it's going to be getting back and forth. I'm definitely glad I'm not, because like I said, I don't, I guess it'd be kind of cool to witness it somehow, some way, whether you have the special glasses or you do the different tricks with being able to.
Yeah. Don't look at the sun. Anyone out there who's listening, don't look directly at the sun. Don't try to use even just sunglasses. You need a special filter. You need the special glasses for it. And
that's just part of a NASA conspiracy, Shane. Come on now. Everybody knows that's poppycock. Yeah, I actually did see a lot of flat earthers out there saying that it's, there's actually a couple of memes floating around that I was, laughing hysterically at about the NASA conspiracy. And, just go out there and look, you'll be fine.
Well, that's actually not true. You can damage your eyesight and even go blind from looking directly at the sun. And so a lot of people say to get those special glasses. If you can't get those, you can use your cell phone to take pictures. But they say don't try to take video because anything more than a few pictures can actually damage the phone if you're not careful. There are filters and apps that you can probably use on your phone to protect your phone. But there's also the old school way to do it is to take a couple pieces of cardboard, and you can poke a small pinhole in one of them, and then you'll have to space them apart at the right, you know, length, but you'll be able to project through the pinhole the image of the eclipse onto the other card. So it's a really old school way to do it. It's really low tech, and you can, you know, protect your eyes. But yeah, I only live, I actually live in Southwest Ohio, right next to Kentucky. And there's going to be a lot of people going to Kentucky. I could probably drive about 3 hours southwest to see a perfectly total eclipse, but I live close enough that I think I'm going to see pretty good eclipse without having to go anywhere. I will be at work tomorrow during the eclipse, but I'll be in and out. So hopefully while I'm outside, I'll get a chance to do that little trick to view the eclipse.
Yeah, I'll probably be outside more likely than not, you know, as long as it's, you know, not pouring out tomorrow. I will most likely be outside by the time it comes near my neck of the woods. And I think when it comes over here, I think it's all the way down to South Carolina, so I'm going to be pretty far away from it. But I think I'm still supposed to be able to see a partial one, so I may try to glance up quickly. But I wasn't going to go through the trouble of either A, going somewhere closer where I could actually see a more total eclipse, or B, getting glasses so I could actually look at it happening. Because you know, I mean, like I said,
one of the articles that Michael wanted us to share actually was from the Associated Press out of Casper, Wyoming, of all places. And it says, Druids, witches, pagans, and Wiccans to head to Wyoming for the eclipse. And it talks about how Wyoming, I'm not going to read it's a short article, but we're getting closer to the break, so I'm not going to try to read the whole thing. But it does say, Wyoming officials estimate the number of people coming to see the eclipse could double the state's population of 585,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not there.
Yeah.
Marge.
All right. We'll be back after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
No end is final element. It's not because I need to know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on jeep,
and Bitcoin, 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 Bitcoin.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says,
Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If a real true fiend can kind of collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If a real true fiend can kind of collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If a real true fiend can kind of collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If a real true fiend can kind of collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If a real true fiend can kind of collect them all.
Shane, and I'm here with Jeremy.
What
and,
up?
Before the break, we were talking about the eclipse and how you shouldn't stare into it and alternative ways of viewing it. And I also have another article here which is related to the eclipse. This one is from The Verge, and it is the title is Why NASA is Sending Bacteria into the Sky on Balloons During the Eclipse.
Because they want to kill us all, man. Chemtrails. Well,
I had heard about this, and so I had to look into it. But it does sound like it's a legit experiment being done by a team. NASA is working with a team of universities across the United States to take some bacteria up in these balloons. And I'll just go ahead and start reading the article here. It says, as the moon blocks the sun's light completely next week in a total solar eclipse, which is actually tomorrow now, More than 50 high-altitude balloons in over 20 locations across the U.S. will soar up to 100,000 feet in the sky. On board will be Raspberry Pi cameras, weather sensors, and modems to stream live eclipse footage. They'll also have metal tags coated with a very hardy bacteria, because NASA wants to know whether they will survive on Mars. Every time we send a rover to the red planet, our own microorganisms latch onto them and hitch a ride across space. What happens to these bacteria once they're on Mars? Do they mutate? Do they die? Or can they continue living undisturbed, colonizing worlds other than our own? To answer these questions, we need to run experiments here on Earth, and the eclipse on August 21st provides a perfect opportunity. The balloons are being sent up by teams of high school and college students from across the United States as part of the Eclipse Ballooning Project, led by Angela Desjardins of Montana State University. When Jim Green, director of planetary science at NASA, first heard that over 50 balloons were being flown to the stratosphere to live stream the eclipse, he couldn't believe his ears. I said, "Oh my God, that's like being on Mars," Green tells The Verge. NASA couldn't pass on the opportunity. The upper part of the Earth's stratosphere, just above the ozone layer, is very much like the surface of Mars. It's about minus 35 degrees Fahrenheit with very rarefied air, and it's hammered by the sun's ultraviolet radiation. During the eclipse, conditions will get even more Mars-like, the temperatures will go down even further, and the moon will buffer some of these ultraviolet rays to better resemble the radiation on the red planet. It's really quite an outstanding astrobiology and planetary protection experiment, Green says. The bacteria that will fly to the edge of space is a particular strain called Penicillin xerothermidurans, I think. Yeah, it was first isolated from soil outside of a spacecraft assembly facility at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida in 1973, says Parag Vaishampayan, an astrobiologist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. These bacteria form shields of spores that allow them to survive when the conditions turn deadly. It takes around 140 hours at 257 degrees Fahrenheit to kill 90% of these bacteria, he tells The Verge. These are some of the most resilient types of bacteria that we know of, a researcher at the Space Biosciences Division at NASA's Ames Research Center said. Last week, Smith finished mailing bacteria, which are not dangerous for people or the environment, to the student groups. Only 34
of them. Oh, sure. That's what they tell you. They're not dangerous.
That's what they want you to think.
Exactly. NASA.
I can see why the conspiracy theorists thought this would be the perfect, you know, place to release a contagious bacteria, because you're going to have so many people converging in these zones within the path of totality. So, I mean, the population density will be high, but this bacteria, as far as I know, is completely not dangerous to people.
Yeah. For me, this falls under the same category as how I ended up looking at, like, you know, chemtrails and stuff like that, just anything like that. It's like, okay, yeah, the chances of putting stuff up in the air like that, having it backfiring, and you end up getting yourself poisoned is way too high, that you'd have to be completely insane to actually be doing that on a regular basis. So, yeah, well, it seems a lot more likely that they're just actually trying to study it to see what it's going to do in space, what it would be like on Mars.
With chemtrails especially, that's an extreme increased likelihood of problems with the variables there.
Well, anything, but, when you're spraying anything into the air, or you're putting anything like this bacteria, like you said,
bacteria is going to be attached to metal plates. It's not being sprayed or dispersed into the atmosphere.
Well, no, I know, but I know, but even if people are like, oh, it can get out there, it's like, yeah, but you'd have to be completely insane to want to take those chances, because once it gets up in the atmosphere, once the wind takes it, you know, anything, like, it could just go anywhere. Right.
Yeah. Well, I am a lot less worried about these balloons than I am about the chemtrails that we see almost daily. So,
yes.
Yeah.
So
these balloons are not anything that I'm worried about. The microorganisms are dried onto a surface of two metal cards the size of a dog tag. One card will fly into the stratosphere, while one will remain on the ground and function as a control group. On eclipse day, the balloons will launch every 15 minutes or so from states that are in the path of the moon's shadow. They'll fly for about 2 hours, reaching the stratosphere and eventually popping because of the pressure drop. Once they're back on the ground, a parachute will slow their descent. The students will track them by GPS, recover the metal tags, and mail them back to NASA.
Okay. So
that's when they say they will get to analyze how many bacteria have died and whether the DNA has changed in any way. If some of them survive the flight, that might mean that these bacteria may have already survived a trip to the Red Planet as hitchhikers on a Mars rover. We don't know for sure whether this particular bacteria is actually on any Mars rover. It was found outside the spacecraft assembly facility, but not on the spacecraft themselves. But even if it's not, learning more about these resilient bacteria could help us understand how similar ones could behave on Mars and help NASA better understand the risks of infecting other worlds. After all, we are sending million-dollar spacecraft to other planets and moons search for alien life, so it makes sense that we'd want to make sure these places are protected from Earth's germs. Pushing organisms to the known limits of life can also help NASA find that life. If we know that resilient bacteria can't withstand certain conditions, then we won't look for life when those same conditions are found on other planets. NASA has conducted very few experiments with high-altitude balloons, and none with this particular strain of bacteria. So flying over 30 balloons at once under such perfect Mars-like conditions that won't be possible to replicate in the lab is an amazing opportunity. Quote, I don't think it's ever been done in terms of a coordinated astrobiology experiment happening across the entire continental United States on the same day, Smith says. This is spatial coverage that one could never dream of in other circumstances. Green hopes that experiment will also inspire the next generation of astrobiologists and planetary protection officers. He got into science when he was in high school and had the chance to use an observatory telescope to observe the sun. Taking part in the Eclipse Ballooning Project might do the same for students flying the balloons. You never know what turns kids on to science, Green says. You never know how excited they can be. Yes. So, yeah.
Well, yeah. So, if it's better than wasting money on other stuff. I mean, yeah, I'm all about the space travel. So yeah, if that's what we gotta, if NASA's, you know, gonna be doing that, sure, why not? Go test stuff out, see how it's gonna work. even if somebody else gets to make use of it later on, you know, like you were saying, it does make complete sense rather than the more conspiracy minded people would want to believe. How else are you going to know whether things are going to survive or die, you know, especially when it comes to bacteria? I mean, you send something like, you know, imagine you go, whether it's Mars or, you know, anywhere else, like, you know, all these other possible planets that may be able to sustain life that they find every now and then, you know, it would be just like, especially if the good old USSA is involved, it would be just like, you know, the history of this country to go someplace and bring your own diseases and then just wipe out a native population. It's like, oh, we finally found alien life and we just killed them all with the common cold. Beautiful, because right. We took the common cold to space and it mutated into something 30 times worse than like the AIDS virus.
Yeah, I could see us doing something like going to Mars and handing out blankets to the Martians that
exactly
end up being infected with something.
Yeah, so yeah, you're right. It does make sense. Like, how else? And if the way they're describing it, I mean, obviously, I don't know that much about space to be able to tell whether they're blowing smoke up my rear end or not, but it makes sense, you know, that you know, you get, you know, the higher up you go in the atmosphere, obviously the conditions change. If you have an event that's going to create, basically, you know, what they're describing is it's basically going to simulate as close as they can get to the Mars atmosphere, you know, situations on Mars. So why not take advantage of it? Especially as we discussed earlier, these things don't happen that often. You know, right. the last mm-hmm. one here across North America was almost 100 years ago, like 99 years to be exact. So, you know, it's a wonderful time to take advantage of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And I have had like a passing interest, sort of a hobby over the decades of, you know, being into science and astronomy and things like that. And this does seem like a legitimate experiment to me. Like, it is a very good opportunity for them to, because there's so many balloons flying into the stratosphere, that they can use that as an opportunity to expose those bacteria to those kind of conditions. So, yeah, it makes complete sense to me. I can see why they're doing it. It's completely pragmatic and safe, in my opinion. So, I mean, I'm also a conspiracy-minded person, but I don't think this is any cause of concern.
Well, yeah, you know, and I mean, yeah, sure. I understand the very flimsy premise people like that have. You know, well, all that stuff's being put up in the air. So, you know, I think you said it earlier, you know, it would be a perfect time to release something like that because everybody else is already either either people are congregating in one area, or everybody's focused on the sky. And what they, you know, instead of everybody focusing on that and, you know, thinking that you're going to, you know, they're going to swoop in and do something horrible, you know, why would they do that when instead they're just busting people who are trying to use, you know, would it be a good opportunity while everybody's paying attention to the, you know, to the eclipse and everybody's focused on a certain area of the sky and focused on one particular thing, you'd think it would be a perfect time to actually do other things, not, you know, not try to poison everybody. But say if you wanted to, you know, use a drone to perhaps transport something, that might be a really good time to do it. And maybe this one gentleman should have waited until the eclipse to actually try this, because there is a story that we had about a guy who was smuggling meth from Mexico using a drone, and he got himself busted, unfortunately. And if he just waited to the eclipse when everybody was paying attention to the sun and the moon and all that stuff, maybe nobody would have noticed him. But
yeah, that will be the perfect time to do something like that.
Exactly. Gotta think ahead, man. But we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get back from the break. Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Final segment, and no real redemption tonight, because I already brought this story up, so now we're going to have to talk about it. But like I was saying before, this guy probably could have timed this better, but yeah, recently, 25-year-old was arrested and charged with trying to smuggle 13 pounds of methamphetamine from Mexico by drone. You know, the Border Patrol claims that this isn't like a super regular occurrence, but it's starting to become a little more popular idea, because, you know, they say things like there's, you know, you can't carry as much by drone as you can say by, you know, smuggling it in like hidden compartments in a truck, in a vehicle, or, you know, hidden compartments are there, or a boat, or some, you know, in a truck or something like that. But you know, this guy was able to do 13 pounds. There's been other situations where they caught people like, I think 30 or maybe more pounds of cannabis and stuff like that. So, you know, the drone technology is advancing more and more, where they can carry more and more weight. So you would think that more people would be trying it this way. Which of course I think is just ingenious, because drones in general just make me laugh whenever I think about, you know, right, building walls and stuff like that.
It's, yeah, like, they make the wall obsolete.
You know, I mean, didn't Trump say something about that, about the fact that you have to be careful about building, or was that like, I heard something about him saying there needs to be holes in the wall or something to that effect, because, you know, people do drop bags of drugs over it and you don't want somebody getting clocked in the head with that.
Basically. That was an actual quote. I don't know if that was real or not.
Yeah, I don't. It sounds like something he could say, but it sounds exactly
like something he would say.
Exactly. But even if it's not, you think about it, though. You know, the higher you build the wall, sure, people are still going to try to toss stuff over it.
You don't want someone to get hit on the head on the other side.
Exactly. But, you know, this of course, just, you know, the Border Patrol agents are going to have to work even harder. It's like, well, no, if you just gave up on the drug war, not only would you have less people trying to send drugs over the border with drones, you'd have less people trying to deal with meth in the first place. You know, like I made a comment about this a while ago about how, you know, meth is basically just the is just this generation's bathtub gin. You know, because that it wouldn't exist if government didn't try to outlaw drugs. Just like the bathtub gin back in the 20s and 30s, you know, the 30s wouldn't have been a thing if not for alcohol prohibition. You know, people ended up dying from badly made liquor, home-brewed liquor. Although actually, I'm almost positive that a lot of those cases were tied to different governments trying to poison those situations.
Right, they were tainted and poisoned in a lot of cases. They were adding methanol to the alcohol.
Yes, yeah. But even situations where it wasn't, you know, people who were inexperienced with making alcohol, you know, made mistakes sometimes. And, you know, people were getting sick from it or dying or whatever. But all because it was made illegal, because as that situation proved, prohibition just doesn't work. Anytime you try to prohibit anything, we talked about this in the first hour about, you know, even with speech, you know, where you prohibit it to the fact where it's not even allowed to be discussed, people forget about how bad it is, and then it becomes almost taboo, where more people want to become interested in looking into it. Because
forbidden fruit.
Exactly. And then, you know, when it comes to the speech like that, if they're not aware of how bad it was, because that part of the history has been basically blocked out, like, you know, we don't talk about that essentially, then, you know, you may be more easily swayed if somebody in the present day has found a new way to talk about it or a new way to package it. You know, because you're not prepared for what it actually entailed, because you were never allowed to know. You know, this poor guy, like I said, the guy who got busted with the meth, if he had waited a little bit waited till the eclipse, he might have been able to get away with it, because more people would be focused on the skies for another reason, and more drones would have been up in the air anyway, are going to be up in the air anyway, with people trying to take pictures and stuff like that.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Listen, you know, if you got to try to take these risks while we have to deal with this prohibition, I mean, I salute you for willing to take the risk, but, you know, think ahead a little bit, man. Come on now.
Worms.
Hopefully he has learned his lesson, and although it seems like he gave up a lot of information pretty readily, so I'm sure he's going to go to jail for a while, unfortunately. Next time, man, be smarter. Anyway, it's been a fun show, Shane. Thanks for joining me tonight.
As usual.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And for more of us, go to freedomfiends.com.